Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The headlines are coming fast and furious this afternoon, nonstop. It's 5:09 here in Atlanta today. Phone number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. It is Eric Erickson here on WSB. Let me bring you up to speed on what's happening with the Obamacare vote before we get into the Devin Nunes information. The Obamacare vote, it's been put on hold. They withdrew it. They thought they were going to bring it on the floor today, but the House Freedom Caucus tried to negotiate with the White House and didn't work. So what you need to know are a couple words, Title I and regs. The regs are regulations. Title I of Obamacare is the burdensome part of Obamacare. It is the overwhelmingly bureaucratic part that drives up costs. It is, when you think of Obamacare, Title I of the Affordable Care Act is what you're really thinking of. And the Republican leaders didn't want to repeal it. They said they wanted to repeal Obamacare, but the meat of Obamacare is in Title I of Obamacare, and they weren't actually repealing that, nor were they repealing the regulations. And the House Republicans' excuse for not repealing the regulations was that they couldn't get it through the Senate under the Byrd Rule. Now, we have to stop here and deviate a minute. Let me explain the Byrd Rule to you. The Byrd Rule is something that can only be used once a year. And it is, the legislation has to be related to the budget, and it has to reduce the deficit, and it can't be filibustered. So you get one bite at the apple to pass legislation related to the budget in the Senate that reduces the deficit, and it can't be filibustered. And the House Republicans decided that if they added the regulations, since the regulations weren't related to the budget deficit, that they wouldn't be able to make it through the Senate under the Byrd Rule. Now, Senator Mike Lee one-upped them. Senator Mike Lee went to the parliamentarian of the Senate and asked if the House Republicans could attach the regulations to be repealed. And the Senate parliamentarian said yes. And that exposed the House moderate Republicans weren't really serious about wanting to repeal the regulations because they flipped out about it and were angry at Mike Lee. And all he did was ask the parliamentarian if they could do it. And she said, yes, they could. And the House Republican moderates did not want to do that. Now, they're trying to blame the House Freedom Caucus today. The House Freedom Caucus, led by Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, Jody Heiss is a part of it. They are the conservatives in the House, and they're being blamed for failing to repeal Obamacare. The House Freedom Caucus has actually tried to move the bill to the right repeatedly, and both the White House and Republican leaders in the House and Senate have refused to go along with them. There were three things they could have done to repeal Obamacare, and the Republican leaders did not want to do it. First, they could have submitted repeal legislation, and when it went to the Senate, let the chair of the Senate rule that it did fit under the Byrd Rule. And if the chair ruled that it fit under the Byrd Rule, as long as 41 Republicans agreed with him, it fit under the Byrd Rule and they could have passed it. That's all they had to do. Now, I know they're trying to tell you it's more complicated than that, but it's really not. I've talked to Senate parliamentarians. I've talked to people who work for Senate Republicans. I've talked to Senate Republican senators. And they all tell me that if the chair ruled it was good under the Byrd Rule. But they didn't want to do that. Now, the other thing they could have done is they could have started from the 2015 legislation they all supported. The 2015 legislation repealed Obamacare. They could have started from that and built a new framework, but they didn't want to do that. The third thing they could have done is they could have just repassed the 2015 law. For God's sakes, they all voted for it. It got a majority of the Senate, and those senators are all there. It got a majority in the House, and those representatives are all there. And they could have sent it to the president. But they didn't want to do that either. And that would have passed under reconciliation, by the way. They didn't want to do any of those three. It was moderate Republicans who didn't want to get rid of the regulations. It was moderate Republicans who didn't want to get rid of Title I. It was moderate Republicans who insisted they had to do repeal and replace at the same time. It was moderate Republicans who insisted you had to have the essential health care provisions included in, where men have to pay for maternity leave even though they don't get pregnant. The moderates did not want to get rid of Obamacare, and now they're blaming the conservatives. The House Freedom Caucus deserves our thanks. If you see or know Jody Heiss, thank him for standing up for this. He was the only Georgia Republican to stand strong. Now, that's the setup for Obamacare. The White House wants them to bring it up for a vote tomorrow to basically shame those who won't vote for it. But what's happened in the last 48 hours is moderates have come out against it. And the more moderates there are coming out against it, the more conservative the legislation has gotten, yet again proving that the moderates don't want to actually repeal Obamacare. A lot of people are slamming the House Freedom Caucus, and I want you to understand they're the heroes here. The legislation would have made health care worse, it would have driven up costs, and it would not have added to the free market. It was a bad piece of legislation. It was Republicans acting in the name of doing something. They wanted to just do something, no matter what it was, and then claim that that was repeal, and that wasn't the case. So hat tip to the House Freedom Caucus. If you know a House Freedom Caucus member, I know Mark Meadows, the congressman from North Carolina, who also led the ouster of John Boehner. So he's got a twofer for being a hero. He's the guy who filed the motion to get rid of John Boehner that went through, and he's the guy who scuttled the attempt to keep Obamacare today by the House Republicans. Mark Meadows' district picks up this radio show, and so I would like him in his district in North Carolina to know we thank him. We thank Jody Heiss. Now, I want to pivot to Devin Nunes, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. He's in a lot of hot water with Republicans on Capitol Hill, not just Democrats. Democrats are unhappy with him, and Republicans are unhappy with him. And I think everybody is missing the point of his statements yesterday. I want to replay for you some of the sound bites from the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee he made at the White House yesterday.
So first, I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Details about U.S. persons associated with the incoming administration, details with little or no apparent foreign intelligence value, were widely disseminated in intelligence community reporting. Third, I have confirmed that additional names of Trump transition team members were unmasked. And fourth and finally, I want to be clear, none of this surveillance was related to Russia or the investigation of Russian activities or of the Trump team. The House Intelligence Committee will thoroughly investigate surveillance and its subsequent dissemination to determine a few things here that I want to read off. Who was aware of it, why it was not disclosed to Congress, who requested and authorized the additional unmasking, whether anyone directed the intelligence community to focus on Trump associates, and whether any laws, regulations, or procedures were violated.
If you haven't heard today, one of the chief bits of speculation as to where this intelligence came from, since it wasn't related to Russia, is Israel. Were American intelligence agents spying on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who after Trump was elected began outreach to the Trump transition team? The relevance here is this. Notice he said incidental and it was foreign. Under federal law, if American citizens are caught up in surveillance that happens abroad, didn't happen in this country, they can't be named. When he talks about masking and unmasking, unmasking means releasing the names, and masking means hiding the names. So Americans who worked for Trump were unmasked. They were named. They were caught up because they were discovered in incidental intelligence investigations that were routine. The key here, and this is what Nunes is getting at, and this is what the media is missing, is that they should not have been leaked since they were incidental. They should not have been leaked since they were Americans. They should not have been leaked because nothing illegal was done. But intelligence operatives inside the Obama administration were circulating memos telling people inside the Obama administration what President-elect Trump intended to do. They essentially through spying on, and let's presume it's Israel, were gathering what the Trump administration intended to do and letting everyone inside the Obama administration know, so that then they could try to disrupt it preemptively by doing things to make it more difficult for Trump to do what he wanted to do. That appears to be the implication. They should never have unmasked these individuals because they were incidental to and not related to the investigations. That is a real problem when our intelligence agents are gossiping, essentially, and sharing that gossip about an incoming president's team that they had no business listening to or eavesdropping on. It is 526, and the phone number here at WSB is 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. When we come back, and I want to spend a few more minutes on Nunez here, but when we come back, we got to deal with some Georgia politics that I need you all to stick around for. It is a huge, huge issue. I haven't been able to spend time on it. It is a budding controversy, and you've got to hear what our legislature and governor are doing that just has me been out of shape, and will you when you hear it and are made aware of what they're doing. It is so problematic. But let me go back to Nunez real quick. I have a problem with what he did, and I want you just to understand my perspective here. I think what his press conference was useful, but there's a pending FBI investigation, and he's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, and there's a separation of powers issue. He is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. He is not in the executive branch, and yet he felt obligated to go to the executive branch and serve their purposes. It wasn't an oversight role. He did not consult with the members of his committee before he did it. He did not consult with Republican leaders before he did it. He did not even consult with the ranking Democratic member of his committee before he did it. He just did it. And I would have a problem with a Democrat doing that to Barack Obama, and I have a problem with a Republican doing that to Donald Trump. Not because of like or dislike of anyone involved, but because of a separation of powers issue. He should not have done that. When he's in an oversight role of the intelligence committee and the intelligence community, he undermines his committee's capacity to get to the bottom of this if they perceive him as just being someone who's going to run to the president and tell the president what he knows as soon as he knows it, before all of the facts are even clear. And even Nunez admitted that not all the facts are clear yet. He should have waited. As for CNN blowing up the story, I would note that only one person told CNN that there was coordination with the Russians. Everyone else who talked to CNN said there wasn't, and yet they're blowing it up as a story. It's nonsense. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. It is 5:39, and the phone number is 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I want to wade into difficult territory here, and my apologies to those of you who are on the phone. You're just going to have to wait, because I have put off and put off and put off this topic, and it can't really wait anymore. And it is one where you would think that everyone could compromise for the good of the children of this state. If you aren't aware of our foster system in Georgia, it is really overwhelmed. A lot of kids in foster care, a lot of kids looking for permanent homes, a lot of kids looking to be adopted. Some of the most productive, most efficient, most effective agencies to handle adoption are the Christian charitable adoption agencies in the state, whether it's Catholic Charities or you name it. There are a number of Christian adoption agencies in the state. Now, they wanted to update the adoption laws in the state because, you know, times have changed and the adoption laws in the state have not been updated in decades. But when they did it, they wanted to put in language. The Republicans in the Senate wanted to put in language that Christian and other religious adoption agencies, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, you name it, that have particular definitions of what a family looks like. we're really getting into the topic of gay marriage here, let's not beat around the bush, that they wouldn't be discriminated against, that they too would be able to be on the same level playing field as funds. Now, you would think that everyone would say, okay, it's children. We know these agencies are the most efficient and most effective at adoption. We know we can't ask them to give up their worldview. We can't ask them to give up their the tenets of their faith. We can't ask them to give up their moral values. So let's just go with it. There are secular and there are sectarian adoption agencies. Everybody can compete for government money, and may the best adoption agency win. But no, 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 no. Governor Deal and Casey Cagle and David Ralston and the leaders in the House and Senate have decided that gay rights groups take priority over children. They have decided that if a Christian adoption agency believes that a two-parent heterosexual nuclear household is the only group that they will adopt into, then they cannot help our foster system in Georgia. They cannot help get children out of foster care into private homes. They're not allowed to get government dollars to do that. Now, we were told if we elected Donald Trump, or you were told, that we wouldn't have to worry about this stuff. We have Tom Price as Secretary of Health and Human Services. But our Georgia legislature and governor would have you believe that somehow if we allow Christian organizations to compete in the state system helping adopt children, that somehow the federal government would punish us. No, we were specifically told that if Donald Trump were elected president, we wouldn't have to worry about that. What they're hiding behind is discrimination. And so essentially they're saying Christian organizations discriminate against gay married couples because they don't recognize their marriage. Therefore, we're going to discriminate against the Christian organization. What the government is actually doing, if you follow the logic out, is they're saying that you can have no moral values. Because if you have moral values and they deviate from no moral values, well, then you can't compete with federal dollars. The government is picking the religious ideals that an adoption agency in Georgia can have, and they're saying you're not allowed to have any. See, I know people who won't eat at Chick-fil-A because they think it is a homophobic, Christofascist organization. They actually say these things. I know people who won't shop at Target because of Target's policy on transgender bathrooms. People discriminate every day. They make choices. The government's not supposed to discriminate. But what the government is doing now is it is picking and choosing who can participate in its system. Because if you have Christian values, you're not allowed to participate unless you give them up. And who is hurt here? The kids are hurt. You would think that the gay rights activists, Christians, the legislature, the governor could all come together and say, this is about the kids, this isn't about your culture war. Christian adoption agencies have a solid record in helping kids in this state get into loving homes. We're not going to make them abandon their values in order to do it. We want every child to be helped, but they're not doing that. The governor and the legislature have decided that gay rights activists must rule the day and have told nonprofit, faith-based organizations, they cannot have access to government funding, they cannot participate in the state foster system because of their views on marriage. You all should be offended by that. Every one of you. I just got a text from a member of the state legislature who's listening, who is a friend of mine, who says the issue is more complicated. They don't want to lose federal funding, and they're afraid that if they allow Christian organizations to compete because they discriminate against same-sex couples and single parents, Catholic Charities, for example, won't adopt into a single-parent family or a same-sex family. And if they allow the Christians to compete, they're afraid that our federal dollars would go away. Y'all know that Donald Trump specifically said that would not happen. Tom Price has campaigned against that sort of thing, and Tom Price is now the head of Health and Human Services. So you really want me to believe that Donald Trump and Tom Price would deny government funding to Christian organizations because they refuse to sacrifice their moral view? I call BS on that. This is the governor and the Republicans in our state legislature who are putting gay rights activists ahead of children. That's what's going on here. They're afraid of Hollywood values. They're afraid of Hollywood liberals. They're afraid of big businesses being upset with them. They're afraid of business boycotts that they think gay rights activists will drum up against them. And who gets hurt in the process? The kids get hurt. Nobody in this state doubts that faith-based charitable adoption agencies are the best in the state. They have the best track record. Nobody doubts that. It is not even in dispute in this debate. And yet they still don't want them to help the state place good kids in adoptive families because of their values. And what are their values? Wholesome, traditional American values, which are suddenly, in this state, the enemy. Now, let's see, how much time do I have to see if I can get into phone calls? I'm cutting it short. Those of you who are on hold, be patient. I've only got about 30 seconds left. Now, when we come back, I want to get in more into the Neil Gorsuch hearing and the intelligence briefings and a lot more on Obamacare. They're trying to basically to hold the conservatives hostage and make them stay in D.C. until they vote for the bill. I'll give you all the details. And we've got Bruce Lavelle at the top of the hour running the 6th Congressional District. It's 610. I'm Eric Erickson, and this is WSB. Welcome. The phone number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I want to move back in now to the confirmation hearings ongoing. Neil Gorsuch, you should know that Sonny Perdue had his hearing today, and it was about 2.5 hours. No controversy at all, other than one woman protester yelling that the agriculture industry commits violence to animals. Yeah, that was her thing. I think Sonny's going to be confirmed with no trouble, and I think that Neil Gorsuch is going to be confirmed with no trouble, but Chuck Schumer came out today and said he will not only vote no, but lead the filibuster against Neil Gorsuch, which tells you that this is all theater. It tells you it's all theater because the hearings aren't even over. The confirmation process is ongoing, and the minority leader in the Senate is saying he's going to filibuster. That is nonsensical. Now, someone who has strong opinions on these things is Bruce Lavelle, who is running for Congress, and I know you support Neil Gorsuch.
Hey, thanks for having me, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal pick. I remember earlier on when, as far as last year, when President Trump became the nominee, back when I was a national delegate at the RNC, there were talks of several very well-qualified Supreme Court picks, which I actually threw David Namias in the hat. He didn't know it, though, but here in Georgia. So threw my little 2 cents in. So I'm very happy.
Namias would have been a good pick as well.
I'm going to tell you, there's a few more on there that the public hasn't really even that really doesn't know about in terms of the talent that the president was choosing. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, look, I don't mean to hold you hostage to the Supreme Court stuff, but with all the news today, I needed to throw that in here at the beginning. But I want to spend time with you here and let you make your case to the 6th Congressional District voters as to why they should support you. And just, I mean, throw it open as I have with all the other candidates and just go on and make your case. The 6th District is listening. Why should they vote for Bruce Lavelle?
Well, the good thing is you're going to endorse me when I get done talking to you. How about that? that's going to be the big case. No, but really, and thanks for having me. You know, Eric, I think the biggest push that I'm going to have for the 6th is that, you know, it's very clear my relationship and how, you know, I did jump on earlier on as far as, you know, President Trump or Mr. Trump coming down the escalator. And a lot of my friends chose Rubio, some chose Bush, and, you know, I figured when it was all said and done, we would all come together and sing Kumbaya, but Some of us didn't, but we'll get there. But I'm very optimistic we will. But, you know, where I'm going with that is that I was very privileged to be here in Atlanta running his diversity coalition, which is called the National Diversity Coalition for Trump. And how that was formed was Michael Cohen, who's executive vice president for Mr. Trump at the time, President Trump, and he represents Jewish Americans for Trump and works for him for over 13 years, and his dad was a Holocaust survivor. And where I'm headed with this is that when President Trump came in to be the candidate, he was, you know, ridiculed and labeled as racist and, you know, anti-Semite and all this crazy stuff. So the coalition was birthed, and a guy in Georgia got to run it for him, and that's me, Bruce Lavelle. I was executive director. It's still ongoing. We're 1 million-plus sign-ups across the country. It's still ongoing, and it's not going to end until he tells us to stop. We're the only entity, too, Eric, that is allowed to have the name Trump in it, which is very interesting. And we have, obviously, African Americans for Trump, Haitian Americans for Trump, Jewish Americans for Trump, you know, et cetera. And we were able to pull this.
So, okay, so now you're running in the 6th Congressional District, and there are so many people running, all of whom I guess are now vying to get into a runoff with the Democrat kid, who I still can't believe this kid has over $1 million and apparently lives next to Emory, doesn't even live in your district.
Right, that's correct. Yeah, it's wishful thinking. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it is either.
I would have taken the money and invested it on rebuilding their crumbling party, unfortunately, but I don't want to give them right. Too much advice on how to run something successful, you know, in an organization like we were able to do.
Right.
But, you know, there are some great candidates, Eric, in the race, but there's only one, Bruce Lavelle. And where I'm going with that is the fact that the relationship I do carry with the president, you know, I know him well, I know the family, and everyone that's in office that's in some level of leadership and administration are good friends of mine. And you're talking about, you know, a person that survived through all the primary with Corey Lewandowski, which I'll get to that. He's coming down the 29th to stomp for me. We got a huge crowd already. We got over 400 signed up so far, so we're very excited about that. And then we went through, of course, Paul Manafort, and, of course, Kellyanne Conway carried the torch across the finish line. So, you know, there's a lot of value with those relationships that when you said, I got to go to break, you noticed you said, we got to go to this traffic. You know how the traffic is. You know, Eric, February 25th, the corridor of 285 and 400 was labeled number one of the worst traffic corridor in the country. So, you know, I am the transportation candidate. And, you know, Dr. Price did a wonderful job putting a compilation of healthcare providers and RNs and his other colleagues, putting that plan to give it to the president, which the president says, hey, let's throw this out here. Let's get some negotiations going. Let's get this going. I support Dr. Price with that initiative. But, you know, Bruce Lavelle can be the transportation candidate for
you know, it's interesting you say that, Bruce, because I've had on now, I think, seven of the other candidates, and you were the first one to mention transportation as the top issue.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, Eric, it's kind of my wheelhouse because I was a very successful MARTA board chairman. And that's not to say I want to extend the $350 million mile infrastructure, because it is, unfortunately, the C310, 311 cars are old. They've been around, and we didn't grow as fast as we should have. But there are alternative means, with that being light rail initiatives in certain parts of the cities. There's a bus rapid transit. There's dual lanes. There's a lot of things with that. But here's the cool thing about this, Eric. President Trump, and I talked to him at CPAC for a while. He said, how's it going? You know, it's like, you're doing good. Is that the interesting thing about it is with the $1 trillion infrastructure overhaul of our aging infrastructure, President Trump, this will be the largest overhaul of the nation's history since Eisenhower, I guarantee you. And in terms of fighting for tax dollars to bring back to the district, I am the heaviest lifter of every single candidate on the playing field, period. I know how to take off and go. I know how to text. I can text whoever I want right now as we speak if I got to get access to get things done. I have a great, wonderful relationship with Congressman Woodall, Barry Laudermill, Jody Heiss, Graves. I know all of these guys. Lynn Westmoreland, he just retired. I spent a good while, my of my tenure in terms of serving in the GOP, bridging folks together, building different coalitions together, different ethnic groups, et cetera. And I think that brings a tremendous value for me to serve and to fight for these tax dollars back. And, you know, the president owes me.
Hey, on that note, Bruce, since I had to start this hour, I don't want to abridge your time and do you a disservice. Right. Since I had to start the hour with Chuck Schumer's news, would you mind holding over me? We need to go take a quick break, but I'd like to keep this conversation going after the next break.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. Oh, I'm talking to Bruce Lavelle. He's running for Congress. I had to get the Chuck Schumer news out there that he's saying he's going to filibuster, and so I don't want to cut Bruce's time short. I'm trying to give everybody as much time as the other guys, but that cuts into his time plus traffic long. So fair's fair. I want to keep the conversation going. We'll be right back. Now, I'm joined by Bruce Lavelle, who's running in the 6th Congressional District. And, Bruce, we got a couple minutes left, and I want to give you an opportunity here to essentially make your closing argument. What distinguishes you from the other candidates in the race? And when you look at this race, transportation, for those of you just tuned in, Bruce has said is really his number one issue. What really just sets you apart that people should say, this is why he's my guy?
Well, the biggest thing, Eric, is that, yes, I am the transportation congressman, and I will be. But the biggest thing for me is that my campaign has not accept any lobby money, any special money, no PACs. I disavow any PACs, anything meddling or monkeying with this race. And I am the candidate that has not beholden to anyone. I owe no favors. And I think it's healthy. And I'm hoping, and my prayer is that this will send a message out to everyone, the voters especially, is to look at a candidate like myself, Bruce Lavelle, for Georgia 6th Congressional, and look at the value what that brings. That you have someone that is totally not beholden to anyone, except my wife, of course. You know,
good answer.
Yes, and you know, I think that says a lot. And you know, Eric, I want to beat the drum harder on the transportation. Is that, you know, we've been blessed with this growth, the largest airport in the world, and we're growing fast. There's a lot of mixed use developments that want to go up Holcomb Bridge around the 400 corridor. But the good thing about President Trump, historically, a lot of projects were just kind of divvied up without where the best, you know, where the worst case, you know, places that needed to be taken care of. And the Atlanta region is number one. And you got to have someone that's battle-tested and tough. And I've been through the storm all through in the primaries. We fought 16 great candidates in the primary. I'm still a surrogate for the president. I go on a lot of TV. I do a lot of liberal TV, unfortunately, because we got to get our voices out there
right
on our values and what we're trying to do. I'm still very active in that. So you get a really strong, heavy lift with a guy like me that can go in there and work together. The good thing, too, is that in terms of the coalition, getting back to that, the value with me is that on the growth of the party and the future of the party, I'm that type of person, that congressman, that can actually help build the failing state party that we're dealing with.
Well, we definitely are dealing with a failing state party. Bruce, I got to let you go there. I've got a hard break here, but thank you for holding over, and I appreciate it so much. Good luck to you in the campaign. That's Bruce Lavelle. He's running in the 6th Congressional District. I think it's time to get into phone calls now. The phone number is 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We've still got another couple of candidates in the 6th Congressional District we want to get to. I, thank God, finally get to be on spring break next week, so we'll do those week after next. Right now, though, let's go to Rue calling from Athens. Welcome. How are you?
Hey, good, Eric. Thank you. Unlike the consensus of the open mic guys, I saw today's delay as a huge victory for the fight to end Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I watched these guys closely, and so I'm a cynic naturally. And like I noticed it last night and today especially, when I start hearing Freedom Caucus guys start saying things like, "Well, we want to be yes, you know, we're getting close," and then I hear them talk about a vote tomorrow, I'd rather them just say, you know, we'll be yes when you get rid of regulations. We'll be yes when you authentically get rid of Obamacare.
Right.
And from what I've heard, we're nowhere near that, man. So my question to you, just for your pulse, is is this a dog and pony show with these guys, or is it, are they legitimately authentically fighting?
Yes. And so what they're doing, and I'm good friends with a number of the Freedom Caucus guys, they're the legit conservatives in the House, is they're trying to show that they're open to negotiation, but they're trying to show it in a way that lets everybody know the reason they're not making any progress is because the rest of the Republicans aren't doing what they need to do to improve the bill. So when Mark Meadows, for example, goes out and says, we're still in negotiations, we're working on the bill, well, that sends a pretty strong signal out there that they're willing to compromise. But when they ask him what the holdup is, he says, well, they won't get rid of the regulations, or they won't get rid of Title I. So there's your tip-off that it is the other Republicans who are having troubles. Now, let me give everybody – this is such a good question here. Let me give everybody the history of the House Freedom Caucus so they know. I want to say now 4 years ago, four years ago, the House Republican Study Committee, the John Boehner led a coup of it. See, Tom Graves from Georgia was in line to be the chairman of the Republican Study Committee. And instead, what happened is the Republican leadership under John Boehner led a coup because they thought Graves would be too conservative, and they were able to put Steve Scalise in as the chairman of the RSC. And it became very clear to the real conservatives in the group that the RSC was now going to be used as a rubber stamp for the establishment agenda, but they were going to be able to say, oh, well, the RSC likes it, so the conservatives are happy. So Justin Amash, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, Jody Heiss, and a number of others, they all left, and they started the House Freedom Caucus. And the House Freedom Caucus is where the real conservatives are now in the House, who are the real fighters, who stand up on principle, and are not going to settle and be yes men for leadership like the Republican Study Committee. Now, Congressman Hudson from North Carolina, who heads the Republican Study Committee, is a good guy, and is a Republican, and is a conservative. But he also wants to try to work with leadership, and he's got a bunch of members in the Republican Study Committee who are not as conservative as he is, so they can push him towards the establishment position. Well, that doesn't exist in the House Freedom Caucus. If you want to know where the conservatives are in Congress, you look for the House Freedom Caucus. And their signaling has been that they're willing to compromise, they're willing to work, but they're not willing to sell out their values and break their promises. And they're getting blamed today by the establishment for scuttling the deal when all they did was expose that the Republicans have no intention of keeping their promise. Somebody called in and asked who were the moderates in the House. Well, basically the New York Republicans, the New England Republicans, those are the ones you got to be concerned with more than anyone else. The New England Republicans and the South Florida Republicans are the ones who don't want to actually repeal Obamacare. Now, I got to tell you, I like the guys in our Republican delegation here in Georgia, but they've all sold out. They want a deal so bad. They really do. I mean, listen to Doug Collins, one of our Georgia congressmen.
Well, I think what you have to understand is that we all have a vote to take. We're making this bill is in the process that we said we would. We're making it and getting ready for the floor vote tomorrow. We are in charge now. Nobody's going to buy the argument that we're going to let Obamacare fail and the Republicans are not going to get blamed for it. I would love to see somebody step up and tell me, oh, if we just let it fail, that Republicans will not catch the blame. Republicans are in charge. It's time for Republicans to lead.
See, they've got this. They got to scratch the just do it itch. They got to do something. They've got to do something. They got to take it on. It's got to be their responsibility. If the Republicans make any changes that don't actually lower costs, they're going to get the blame and they're going to own it. If they let Obamacare collapse on its own, well, they can say, we told you so, and now let's really come to the table and fix it. But they don't want to do that. They want to tickle it. They want to nibble at its edge. They don't want to do anything. And everybody, including everyone in our Georgia delegation, except for Jody Heiss, all the rest of them, they just want to do something so they can be seen as doing something, no matter how bad it is that what they're actually going to do. It's so frustrating. I get that what they want. I get that they want to be seen as keeping their promises, but they're breaking their promise and doing it. It is 6:54. Let's see if we can work in another phone call here before we're out of time. John and Cumming, welcome.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, this is John.
Yes, real sir.
Real quick, just a comment. It looks to me that the reason they're calling this bill Obamacare Light is because Mr. Ryan and Mr. McConnell are John McCain Light. I think it comes across to me that they loaded this bill. Everybody says in 7 years, why didn't they get more done? They did. I believe they planned this, especially after it was obvious that Mr. Trump was going to win, to submarine and sabotage him. And the way you do that is bring forward a bill and load it with things that you know the most conservative members of the House are going to choke at and oppose, and thereby guarantee its defeat and bring President Trump to look with egg on his face.
Well, and blame the conservatives as well. Now, my sources on the Hill, some of whom are in the House Freedom Caucus, tell me that McConnell in the Senate is more the driver of this train than Ryan is, and that on the House side, it's some of the really squishy chairmen who are really sabotaging this thing. You got a number of moderate chairmen that John Boehner put in place that Ryan never did replace, and he should replace those chairmen. The House leadership, though, Kevin McCarthy is a squishy moderate, and Steve Scalise is as well. The entire leadership is to the left of you and me, and they're to the left of the president. And I think they've convinced the president that this is the plan that can get passed, and it's clearly not the plan that can get passed. And I really do wish the president will fall back on his old plan, which is just to blame the Democrats and say, look, we told you this was going to fail. Let it fail and then create a new plan. That seems to be, to me, the preferable situation here. But I don't know that that's going to happen. They're going to try to have a vote tomorrow as well. I saw a reporter say essentially it's going to be like Stockholm Syndrome. They're going to keep the conservatives on Capitol Hill surrounded by people until they finally give in. I don't know that they're going to give in. The House Freedom Caucus guys are the fighters, and they're the principled guys, and they know that this bill breaks the promise to repeal Obamacare. So God bless them. If you see Jody Heiss, tell him thank you. He needs it.